this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National earthquake.
Based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Boy, I've never meant that more. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it, we go in the field to investigate. I have been out of the country for a while, and so much stuff has been happening, gosh, it's going to be hard to catch up, but here's one that caught my eye, made my skin crawl. Story you may have heard about from India. During a Hindu festival, a large group of people were celebrating outside. The crowd turned their heads to shrieks of horror because they saw something that looked like it came straight out of a horror movie. An army of venomous spiders invading the town in one big dark rush. People were running away. They were screaming. The creepy crawlies were latching onto everything, biting people left and right. They say anything that moved or breathed. Nobody knows what has caused this. At least two people are dead. Others are suffering from various injuries. They're trying to figure out the exact toxicity of the venom. But according to biologists, they have never seen a group of spiders, really an army of spiders, work together like this. They say they can jump incredible distances, and that sometimes you'll turn and a spider will just spring onto you and latch itself. So I know that my mother is squirming right now listening to this program. But, you know, whenever the Mother Nature just starts going bonkers, you start seeing it affect the smaller creatures first. But, my God, it's definitely affecting the humans as well, as you'll see later on in the show tonight. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer tonight, Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor, good evening.
Good evening, Joshua. You look like you have, let's call it some bloodlust in your eyes.
Well, I have tasted blood in Transylvania.
Right.
And not many people can say that. In fact, you know, Forrest, I've only been back in the country for about a week. And this trip to Europe wrapped up about 3 months of solid traveling for me, because, you know, I've been shooting this TV series. Still can't talk too much about that right now. But I went from traveling all over for the TV series to this big expedition in Transylvania. Yes, it's a real place. It's in Romania, in Europe. Spent time traveling around to all of Dracula's castles, and then I went to London for a few days, where I visited the Tower of London. I did the Jack the Ripper walk and saw all the places where the bodies were found, visited the crown jewels. And let me tell you, they pale in comparison to my family jewels.
I bet. You know, we've been talking and hearing from listeners. I breezed over your crown jewels thing because yours are nothing compared to mine.
Oh, okay. How would you know?
Well,
you haven't been to London.
Maybe I have. Maybe I haven't.
So what's going on?
Anyway, first of all, glad to have you back. Been hearing from listeners. I think the listeners are going to handcuff you to the studio here because they've enjoyed the best ofs we've been doing.
Right.
But I've heard from a few of them. They're like, we want new Speaking of Strange episodes. We want more than one every couple months now.
Well, you know, for the foreseeable future, we're going to be cranking out a new one every week.
Good.
And in fact, I usually would be traveling even more, but this TV contract has sort of restricted what I can plan for events and things.
Right.
So, ironically, having this TV thing is going to keep me around more, but then all of a sudden I'll have to be gone for a long period of time. But when I'll be back for a long period of time. So for now, yeah, I mean, it's weird for me to have always had a trip, you know, on the horizon for every week or whatever, and now I don't have any travel planned because I'm, you know, waiting for this TV stuff to basically air, and then they'll tell me where they want me to go. But tonight is going to be a special edition of the show because very few people have gone to Transylvania and done what we did. In fact, the natives there told us that they were not aware of any other paranormal investigation team doing what we did, that we're breaking some ground. And I know that's hard to believe, but I just think for some reason, well, you got to realize Romania was communist till 1989.
True.
So a lot of people still associate Romania with this kind of war-torn, run-down, you know, red communist environment. And you still see a lot of remnants of that around the bigger cities like Bucharest, but most of Transylvania, beautiful, green, rolling hills. In fact, I'll give you some nice descriptions here in a moment. But first, I was there with a group of people. We took, I think there were 35 of us total, including our guide and the tour guide owner, Christian. We had Christian and Radu. Radu was the native. Guy's never even been to the U.S. He was born right there in Brasov in Transylvania, has lived there his whole life. So we got a real grassroots, homegrown experience. And it was, honestly, the trip of a lifetime. And I am just delighted that investigator Shelley Wright was there and is here in the studio tonight to help tell the story of what just happened to us. Welcome back to the country, Shelley.
Thank you very much. I made it back.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. And this is the first time we've seen each other since we were back in the country, because we came back at different times.
Right.
And, you know, what we did, this trip that we just took was so amazing, was so fortunate, and there was just so many great things that worked out for us that could have gone terribly wrong, that I decided we would be doing an injustice if we did not retell our journey, our expedition, in as much detail as possible. Because I'm presuming that 99% of the people who are listening to this right now are never going to go to Transylvania and do what we did. Because it's hard to make the arrangements to do what we did. We rented out special castles and special places to get special access. I mean, so you can go over there as an individual. It's not going to be so easy, however, to accomplish what we did, going over as a group specifically for this purpose. And so tonight is going to be a special edition of the show, but I honestly believe it's going to be part one of a two-part series.
because the notes that I have here about what happened to us over there are so extensive and so interesting that I want to take my time with it. And I'm not just talking about paranormal stuff. I'm talking about the little things, like what the toilets look like, what the food tasted like, funny little things about the culture there that you wouldn't expect. It really is a nuanced sort of travel blog of here is what it was like, step by step, day by day, stage by stage, to be there, painting this portrait for you, this mental portrait on the airwaves. So we're going to spend the first 2 hours of the show here talking. We're going to go as far as we can go into the trip. And, you know, we'll make it as far as we can on tonight's show, and we'll stop there, and we'll pick it up next week's show. Because also, we are going to do our normal Dark 30 hour, the last hour of the show, because there's just too much crazy insanity. I mean, it just, the world has become so sick and violent and perverted. Wait till you hear some of the things that I have to tell you about tonight during the Dark 30 hour. And, you know, for me to say that is a big deal because, yeah, you know, I'm always getting sent the most perverted, sick, weird, violent, twisted stuff in the world. And for me to say we're reaching a new level in 2012 is something you should take very seriously. And you will understand in the Dark 30 hour why I say that. Dark 30, not for kids. It's going to be offensive for a lot of people if you don't want to hear this real reporting on what's happening out there. Also, we're going to attempt to have a little special report from Mobius about the zombie apocalypse, because since I've been gone, there's been one story after another about people basically eating each other. We all know about the guy who got his face eaten off in Miami. We've heard that over and over. You've seen the pictures, have you? You guys?
I haven't seen the pictures.
You haven't seen the pictures? Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, the pictures are, in fact, I know Mobius posted them on the Facebook page. And there are people who went and looked at the pictures and were like, I wish I'd never seen that. But yeah, it's just, you know, the guy, he looks like he has a red bloody skull with fragments of beard at the bottom, you know.
And he lived.
Yeah, he's alive, last. I heard. Yeah. So people are, but that's, you know, that's the case everybody's talking about, but there are numerous examples of people who are now eating each other. They're jumping on each other and eating each other's flesh in these horrible, random, bizarro attacks. Just strangers doing this to other strangers. When I get Mobius on later, again, presuming we'll be able to get him in here, he's going to give us a rundown, like a condensed timeline of, like, here's what's been happening. Boom, 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 boom. So tonight's going to be hopefully everything that Speaking of Strange should be and more. When we come back, we'll begin telling you about our expedition to Transylvania, all the haunted castles of Dracula, and keep in mind all tonight's bumper music, or at least the vast majority of it, is Dracula-oriented. So, this is the program where the unusual becomes usual, where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. It's called Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and the fun begins in earnest right after this. Bram Stoker's Dracula, a Francis Ford Coppola film. A lot of people know the Dracula story best from this movie. And you might recall, in the movie's beginning, it actually shows Vlad Tepes, that is, as we know him, Vlad the Impaler, inside his castle, fighting off an invasion by the Ottoman Turks. And at one point in the movie, his wife or mistress commits suicide by jumping out the window because she believes that he's been killed in battle, when in fact he was not. There is some truth to that. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Be sure to visit speakingofstrange.com for a live chat during the program. More information on topics discussed and links to things like the official Haunted Asheville ghost tours. Great time to do that, hauntedasheville.com. Also, later on, we're going to talk about some pictures at joshuapwarren.com related to something that, well, Shelley experienced. Anyway, Vlad, to really understand who he was, you have to put yourself somewhat in the context of the times. Vlad the Impaler was born in the 1400s, and his father was essentially a king, a ruler, and his father's name was also Vlad, but he was the member of a Christian order called the Order of the Dragon. And in Romanian, the word for dragon is Dracul. It also signifies demon, and if you say Dracul to somebody there, it's an insult, as a matter of fact. His son, Vlad Tepes, was born, and they called him Dracula, meaning son of the dragon. Okay, and as a young boy, Vlad Tepes was sent to be a slave of the Ottoman Turks as a what they call a loyalty offering from his father. So that is to say that when a ruler is trying to assure his opposition that he is trustworthy, he would sometimes send his kids there. And so Vlad, as a young boy, was supposedly beaten and abused and stuff by these Turks. So he grew up with a great hatred of them. When he finally became a ruler as a man over Wallachia, which is basically there are three regions in Romania. You have Wallachia, Transylvania, and Moldova. When he became in charge of Wallachia, it was in great disarray. I mean, there was widespread violence. It was a very disorganized society. And Vlad began using these draconian methods to create order there. Now, yes, what he did was very cold and cruel, but he lived in a very cold, cruel world. And his method was effective. He, for example, told some of the German Saxons in Transylvania that if they wanted to do business in Wallachia, they needed to pay a certain tax. Okay, fine. At first they did, but then after a while they started getting sloppy, and Vlad said, if you want to do business here, you pay this tax. And they basically started saying, you know, screw you. And he says, fine. So he went in and he rounded up a bunch of these German merchants, and he impaled them on a hill. I think that was near Raznov or Brasov or one of those areas, right, Shelley? And the numbers vary from 40 all the way up to several hundred, depending on the account you believe. Forrest, you've seen that famous woodcut of Vlad sitting there dining with all the bodies impaled right behind him? That's where it comes from. It comes from this one incident. They call it the Forest of the Impaled. This huge hill, and we'll talk about that hill more later because we went there and did an investigation of that hill. But here's how they would actually impale you. A man would lay down on the ground, essentially, and they would have his arms tied to ropes, and they would pull his arms back, and then they'd tie his legs to ropes, and they'd pull his legs out, and they'd pretty much spread him spread eagle out. And then they'd lay down a big log with the pointy end, and it was pointed at his bottom, and they would hammer this stake through his rear end all the way up till wherever it happened to come out at the top. And then they'd lift it up, and I'm sure he'd slide down a little bit more every time, and it was a horrific thing. And when you rolled into a town and you saw hundreds of men on stakes, you realized maybe I better behave myself here, right? And in fact, in one of the towns, there was a great fountain, and sitting on the rim of the fountain was a gold cup. And throughout Vlad's entire reign, which was only about 6 years before he was imprisoned and later executed, beheaded, nobody once ever tried to steal this golden goblet because they were so afraid. Supposedly, at one point, some ambassadors came to visit him from another country, and they did not remove their hats. And so he had their hats nailed to their heads to make sure that they would never remove them to anybody if not him. These kinds of stories go on and on. And the reality is, you know, in this brutal world, he organized it very, very quickly into a rather impressive, smooth, functioning society. And when the Turks came to invade him at his castle, Poenari, which we'll talk about more later, which is the real Dracula's castle. There are a lot of places that say we're the Dracula's castle, but no, the real one is in ruins called Poenari. When they came to get him, he fled on a horse, but he turned the horseshoes backward. So they thought he was going in the opposite direction. He was quite clever. And it was his wife or mistress who actually jumped to her death outside the window there. And apparently the rest of his life he was guilt-ridden and anguished over this. So I tell you these things to give you a little bit of context for who Vlad the Impaler actually was. When Bram Stoker wrote the novel Dracula in the late 1800s, you got to remember, Bram Stoker never actually went to Romania. He read about it in books. He had a friend who traveled there, but he wrote some incredibly detailed, vivid, realistic accounts of the Romanian landscape and culture without ever actually having traveled there. And he was Bram Stoker was originally going to call his book The Undead. At the last minute, they changed it over to Dracula. And what he did was he took the reputation that Vlad Dracul had for being a very brutal, you know, sort of ruler, and sort of combined it with that of Elizabeth Bathory, who was a princess who lived in the area who basically would bathe in virgin's blood and whatnot to maintain her youth, and sort of wrapped it all up into this fictional character that we know as Count Dracula. But you can see segments and bits and pieces and nuggets of reality everywhere. What we found in Transylvania was that in their culture, the closest thing to what we think of as a vampire is what's called the strigoi. And the strigoi is, it's supposed to be an unrestful spirit of the dead. And basically, there are a number of ways you can become a strigoi, and once you do become a strigoi and you start wandering around, you're this lost spirit, and you need to suck blood in order to build up a physical body. They say that if a strigoi is successful, little by little, it will develop a skeleton, and then it will start to develop flesh, and so on, and so it can like create a false body. And to avoid this happening, you're supposed to stake the dead body down to the ground to anchor it so that the spirit cannot get up and leave. Cutting the head off is also helpful. But the funny thing is, in our vampire culture, we think, well, you can only be a vampire if you get bitten by one, right? Well, in their culture, there are a lot of different ways to become a strigoi. One is to be the seventh child of the same sex in a family. So if you're the seventh son or the seventh daughter, you know, that's fine. Another way is to die without being married, to die by suicide. But there's also one here that I thought was interesting. To be a redhead. That's all it takes. Be a redhead and you're a strigoi. We're going to take a break. Keep that in mind. I planted that seed. I'm in the studio. If you don't know, Shelley Wright, famous for her blazing, thick, red hair. I think she's a Strigoi. And once we get into this journey that you're going to hear about, you might think so as well. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Stick around. You're listening to the Dracula Expedition Retail here on Speaking of Strange. Joshua P. Warren, you're listening to Speaking of Strange. We just got back from Transylvania, studying Dracula. And you are hearing tonight all about the expedition in as much detail as we can give you. I want to put you there, right there on the plane with us, let you know sort of what it was like. And to me, understanding a culture is about the nuances, about the little things. And the kind of stuff you might not read about in a tourism brochure. You know, I was talking about Vlad before the break, and you've probably seen a picture of Vlad Dracul at some point. He has a long face, a long pointy nose, black, thin, slightly arched eyebrows, a thick black mustache, long black hair. And he wears this funny-looking cap. It looks almost like a red velvet sort of aristocratic head garb with maybe a jeweled brim. And there is sort of a gold-colored star and ruby on the front. And then it's extending from the star, you see what looks like almost a feathery or fibrous kind of white sprig sticking up, maybe with a few pearls around it. But the point being here, I learned from Radu, our guide, not many people realize that Vlad was born the year that Halley's Comet came around. And if you look at his head garb here and you see the star with the sprigs coming from the top, what does that look like?
Like a comet.
It looks a lot like a comet, doesn't it? So did Vlad believe that he was special in that, you know, maybe this comet heralded something about him? Who knows? So, okay, given the movies, given all that we've heard and whatnot, what's it like to actually go to Transylvania and investigate? Well, for one thing, Transylvania is about 7 hours ahead of us here on the East Coast. Right, Shelley? 7 hours?
Yes.
Okay. And so to get there, it's really, it feels like a two-day journey. In fact, once I got there, by the time I finally got there, got settled in, ate dinner and whatnot, and went to sleep, I'd been up for 40 hours straight because I couldn't sleep on the plane. So I felt zombie-like myself. Now, just so everybody knows, Shelley, you and I came in on different flights and we left on different flights.
Yes.
Because I got in a day or two earlier than you,
right.
And then you stayed a day or two after I did.
Yes.
And so, you know, we didn't necessarily have the exact same experience. But anyway, we both went in on British Airways. And, you know, I fly all the time. And let me tell you, you have no idea how screwed you're getting by the American airlines until you fly British Airways.
I love British Air.
Have you ever flown British Air, Forrest?
I have not.
I couldn't believe it. Okay, well, they got four classes. You got, like, your coach class, and then you have World Traveler Plus, and then business class and first class. And in first class, you basically have, like, a bed that you can lay down in. And,
yeah.
So we were in World Traveler Plus. So we were just, like, the next notch up. And even that was, like, beyond first class on most American airlines. Big, nice seats that recline back a long way. Hot meals. Little silly things like they bring out like a little, here's a hot towel for you to wipe your face off with.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, thank you. You know, just a hot towel. And, you know, just little crazy stuff like that. Food, food, food. They just feed you and they put you to bed. They tuck you in. They give you a movie to watch. I mean, you've got a touch screen there with tons of, yeah, right, Forrest. You got a touch screen there with all kinds of different options for new releases. And I mean, good, good movies, right? You couldn't ask for a better experience traveling there. I flew from Charlotte to Chicago to Heathrow in London to Bucharest. And Shelley, you flew from Raleigh to New York to Heathrow to Bucharest.
Yes.
So in Heathrow, I had a delay there, a layover, and I was eating breakfast with Lauren and Dave Schrader, who hosts Darkness Radio. And Dave, of course, if you don't know, was my partner on this whole expedition. And so, so I'd never been to London before, even to the airport, right? So we're sitting there, and Dave says, I want to get an omelet. And he orders, an omelet with, you know, basically like a mushroom, cheese, tomato, pepper omelet or something like that, you know. So a few minutes later, they come out, and they sit down a plate. And it's got the egg, and then on the side, it's got the mushrooms, and then on the side, it's got the cheese, and then on the side, it's got the pepper. And he's like, what the hell is this? I'm like, well, that's the omelet. They don't mix an omelet there. Well, what's the point of having an omelet, right? And so what we found was that in Europe, a lot of stuff would have the same name on the menu as here, but when you got it, totally different thing you're ordering. I mean, we were at a hotel later. Dave ordered stuffed pork chop. And this was the night before you got there. They brought him out a pork chop, but the stuffing was on the side. He says, well, why do you call this a stuffed pork chop? And I'm like, well, you can stuff it in there if you want. I mean, seriously. And I ordered toast, and the toast came out with tomatoes on it. You know, just odd little things like that. So anyway, when we finally arrived in Bucharest, it was a much rainier day than when you got in, Shelley. We walked off of the airplane, and within 5 seconds, thunderclap, lightning struck. I mean, it was a dramatic introduction to Romania, let me tell you. So anyway, when we got to the hotel, and I think the hotel I stayed in the first night was the one you stayed in the last night. Casa Wagner, right?
Casa Wagner.
In Bucharest?
That was the...
We stayed in two Casa Wagners. One was in Bucharest, and one was in Sigishwara. So I don't know if you stayed in that one your last night or not.
I don't know.
Where'd you stay in Bucharest the last night? You don't remember?
I don't remember the last night.
See, she was blitzed. She got a hickey that night. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
So anyway, but the elevators are so tiny. They have the second largest building in the world there in Bucharest after the Pentagon. It's called the Palace of the Parliament. It's gargantuan. It's a big left. It's a communist dinosaur. And we got into the shuttle, and we drove and drove and drove and drove and drove and drove, and the whole time we're just driving around this thing. It's just a massive complex. I can't even remember how big it is. Second largest building in the world, and they can't create an elevator anywhere that's large enough for three people. And, I mean, when you get on the elevator, you got luggage and everything. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Don't know why that is, but... You can smoke everywhere. Everywhere. Smoke on the elevator, you know, babies are smoking. You smoke at dinner. Smoke. Coming from North Carolina, where now you can't even smoke in a bar, even though we're the tobacco homeland, that was pretty amazing, don't you think, Shelley?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was just commonplace, strike up a smoke wherever. So anyway, very first night, we and most people there do speak English. And we're a little early for our break, aren't we? Got a couple minutes, don't I?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first night, well, most people there do speak English in the big cities. You get farther out in the countryside, older people, little more difficult to communicate. But so first night we got there, and we're kind of talking in broken English a little bit with the guy at the front desk. We went up to our room, Lauren and I. Walked into the room, nice room, but we went over and, you know, the first thing you do, you turn on the lights. Lights wouldn't come on. None of the lights would come on in the room. So what the heck is the problem? Has a fuse been blown? You know what's going on? Turns out, when you walk into the room, there's a slot on the wall that you wouldn't even notice. It looks like part of a thermostat or something, and you have to go in and you stick your room key in the slot, and now all the electricity will work in the room. And then as you go out, you remove your room key, and everything goes off. Never seen that before, but it was pretty much in every room we had, right, Shelley?
Mm-hmm.
Little things like this. I'll tell you more about that as we're getting settled into this strange, exotic culture, Romania. Right there, and I mean, this is dead center in Europe. This is old world Europe. This is not some Americanized European city. This is the real deal. We'll continue telling you about our trip when we come back. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
You hardly ever saw Granddaddy down here. He only come a town about twice a year.
Fang.
I'm sure you've heard it.
Now, Shelly, I would have gotten this just from the store. Of course, I'm cheating here. I can see what the piece is.
This is the music to the original Bela Lugosi Dracula from 1931. And that's really what, you know, springboarded the modern appreciation for that book. I mean, the book did well on its own, but it wasn't until that movie was made that it became one of the most successful stories ever written. And then, of course, you know, it was, I think, Anne Rice who kind of turned it into the form that we have today with the sexy vampire guy that...
Frank Langella, Dracula, 1979.
Everybody's got their favorite, you know,
that
version.
When Dracula became sexy.
So did you guys ever see any sparkling vampires over there?
Nick.
They only live in the U.S., the sparkly ones.
Okay.
In Vegas. So, you know, we're talking about, like, just odd things. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. We just returned from Transylvania, and, you know, this is part one of maybe a two- or three-part series about all the stuff that happened to us. We're kind of setting the stage, what it's like over there. And, you know, Shelley, you were mentioning, it's funny that, like, the flooring there is not level. I mean, we're basically tripping the whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah.
You're, by the end, you're just not embarrassed anymore because you've just tripped your way through the whole country.
There's no caution tape anywhere that's fluorescent, and everything is dark. And, I mean, they just... I don't see how people don't, like, break their legs every day. But anyway, did you notice in the bathroom, when you get in the shower, there was no shower curtain, and the water would just run all over the floor?
Oh, it would. There was one hotel. It was so tiny. I consider myself a pretty small person. I could not maneuver in the shower without... Well, I think I broke a couple of things, but I think I fixed them.
Oh, tell me about it, man. You know, they would have a big drain in the middle of the floor.
Yes.
And there would just be water everywhere.
Everywhere.
They don't have washcloths there.
No.
I don't know why. Also, all the toilets had like a huge, big button on the wall. And you would flush the toilet, like, just by punching it, be like, poof. And they would have one side larger and one side smaller. And you'd push the smaller one if you did a number one, and the bigger one if you did a number two. And that would, I guess, conserve water. But my biggest gripe about all of Europe was how horrible the bathrooms were everywhere. They were small. They were filthy. I mean, I went into a bathroom at one restaurant. You're talking about small here, Shelley. You know, I'm 6'2". I swear I'm not exaggerating. The only way I was able to get into the stall was to stand on top of the toilet, which was about to break under my weight, and close the door. And then when it came to getting out, I thought I was going to have to scream for help.
Oh, no.
I thought I was going to be stuck in the toilet. Yeah, it was horrible. I hate the bathrooms there.
There were a couple of places we stopped where they didn't have toilet seats, and I'd wait in line to get in there, and no toilet seat. And I'm like, I can't sit on this thing. I'm going to fall in. So,
and they have pay toilets also. It's funny, you know, in America, you never see a pay toilet, but you go there, especially in England, they did that a lot. There's a person standing there, and they're like, give me a dollar if you want to come in and use this toilet. In England, they actually had, you know how, like, you get on a subway or something, and they have these turnstile-type things that you walk through? In England, they would have that in front of the bathroom. And you'd walk up, and you'd pop, like, 50 pence in there, and, you know, because we're in England, and then you'd walk through, and there'd be a person there, like, making sure you didn't hop the turnstile there and go use the bathroom. I don't like that idea. There's something humanitarian about letting a person, you know, use the bathroom properly without having a certain amount of change in their pocket or whatever, right? So, anyway, first night we got there, and this again is the night before you got there, Shelley, we had our first experience with what is known as tuica or palenca. Now, in Romania, if you are going to have a proper meal, then you need to have a shot of liquor before each meal. Doesn't matter if it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. I like this policy. And it's called tuica, which is a high alcohol content form of distilled plum brandy. But so the tuica is the lower alcohol form. The high alcohol form, which is pretty much like moonshine, is called palinka. And for some reason, everybody drinks palinka instead of tweaker. And so, you know, it was common to just get, you know, pretty screwy before you'd have a meal. But it does help the appetite out. And, I mean, we had a lot of great palinka stories, which maybe we'll save those for another time. But before you drink a shot of palinka in Romania, you toast by saying, Noroc, right?
Noroc.
I thought it was Noroc, but I think it's Noroc. It's a long O. Noroc.
Oh, you know, once you take that shot, just don't remember much.
And Noroc means good luck. So that's it was always Noroc. Down the shot.
But you never toast with water.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, Patty kind of jinxed us for the morning we left.
It'll rain the next day.
Yes.
To do that. And another thing, if you want water and you want it with like carbonated sparkling water, you ask for water with gas. And when they do the water with gas thing, that comes out and, you know, it's like Perrier or that sort of thing. We're taking a break. When we come back, we'll continue telling you weird things about Romania, and then at some point we'll actually get into the expedition. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange, and we'll continue telling you about our Transylvania expedition experience. Right after this, don't touch that dial.